In addition to the rapidly changing weather, another feature of springtime is birds. The chatter picks up as the days get warmer and the flowers bloom. Even people who don't reach for binoculars or camera as birds approach get excited. Our first guests devote their careers to birds and their protection and upkeep. They work for the Klamath Bird Observatory based in Ashland. Here's our chance to learn more about the works of KBO and a chance to learn about and celebrate a 100-year-old law set up to help birds. From the Klamath Bird Observatory, Marcella Schotto is the assistant director. Welcome, Marcella.
Thank you.
And Jamie Stevens is here again. She's the science director at the Bird Observatory. Thanks for joining us again, Jamie.
Thanks for having us.
So let's go back a little bit in history here first and talk about the Migratory Bird Treaty of 1916. This was a major accomplishment for its time, wasn't it, Jamie?
Yeah, it's one of the laws that really produces the groundwork for bird conservation. The first treaty was signed in 1916 between the United States and Canada, and then subsequently Mexico, Japan, and Russia signed similar treaties over the course of the next maybe 50 years following that. And it really lays the groundwork for both legal protections as well as conservation efforts. You know, these migratory birds are crossing political borders, and they have to face all these different environmental conditions throughout their annual life cycle.
Which really turned out to be a major issue mid-20th century, I think, because Mexico, I think, still had DDT after the United States banned it. And so that was one of the major things to resolve down the road.
That's an excellent example of the types of issues that the Migratory Bird Treaty Act helps us set up to overcome.
How significant would you say the Migratory Bird Treaty has been to the surviving and thriving of bird species?
I think it's been essential in the past, and I think it is still one of the most important legislative pieces that we have to do bird conservation.
How bad had things gotten at any point along the way? I mean, what were the sorts of things that led up to the creation of the Migratory Bird Treaty?
Well, there's been a history of declines in bird populations that were already being recognized back in 1916. And so those made us think about kind of how we needed to work together for these birds that were doing migrations across the countries.
All right. Let's talk about the Klamath Bird Observatory itself, Marcella, and give us a little bit of history of KBO and how it came to into being and what it is aimed at doing.
Well, KBO incorporated back in 2000, and we are a science-based observation organization. So we use observation science to band and monitor migratory birds. They're really fascinating birds. Can show us how well an environment is doing because they need the smallest organisms to survive, but also the largest organisms in an ecosystem to survive. So counting them, we can see how an environment is doing and then hopefully give that data to the people that are interested and help them make really good land management decisions.
Well, small organisms, this is an important thing to think about because this is where people are thinking, oh, I want the bugs off my property. I want to keep them off my fruit, my corn, my whatever. But the fact is that you're not only causing some problems in getting pesticides out in the environment, but you're killing the food sources for some rather critical creatures.
Exactly. Everything relies on everything. You know, people are really concerned about bees, of course, right now. But, you know, birds are huge pollinators as well. And so are those nasty bugs as well.
Birds, pollinators, really? Tell us more, Jamie.
One of the most prominent pollinators that we all see all the time is the hummingbird. And so that's one of the good examples of one of the birds that goes from flower to flower to flower. And sometimes an individual hummingbird will have their whole territory on a single tree and just move around pollinating all day long.
So give us an example of a project that the Klamath Bird Observatory does. I mean, an ongoing program, perhaps, that you're out there encouraging people to take good care of birds and the environment in which birds live.
One example of a program that we have going on right now is using the science that we have about birds to help guide oak restoration. So oak woodlands are a habitat type that has experienced dramatic declines due to direct habitat loss. And then the oak woodlands that remain are threatened by various different conditions. And so we use birds to help us think about how to best restore those oak woodlands. You know, I always tell our partners, we can go out and we can see that we've removed the conifer trees, for example, and it looks like an oak woodland again. But it's very important that the birds see it as a functional oak woodland. And if those oak-associated birds move back in, then we know, like Marcella was saying, that the ecosystem is kind of back in balance.
So you really have to kind of look at an ecosystem with bird's eyes, it sounds like.
Yeah, and then we implement monitoring to make sure that the restoration is on a successful trajectory or has achieved the goals that we thought it would.
We're talking to Jamie Stevens and Marcella Schotto from the Klamath Bird Observatory here on the Jefferson Exchange. If you have some questions about bird care and feeding or some stories of your own to talk about birds that you've spotted that you never thought you'd see in your backyard or nearby, join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. That's our phone number. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. How close, then, are the associations between species of tree and species of bird? You talk about the oak restoration. I mean, are there kinds of birds that won't nest in something if it's not an oak savanna?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why birds make excellent indicators of habitat change. So when we go out and we study birds, we look at a whole suite of species. And some of them are generalists, and they'll inhabit anything from our backyard to the deepest conifer forest. But then we have other birds that are considered obligates to a certain habitat type. And there are birds that will only nest in oak woodlands, for example.
So what are the processes you have to go through to make an authentic oak woodland, to make a restoration, one that the birds will appreciate in addition to human eyes?
Well, we think about more than just the oak trees. So the oak trees is obviously the most critical component of restoring an oak woodland, but we also need to think about the different wildlife structures that would be present in a natural oak system. So there needs to be prevalent cavities. There needs to be downed wood on the ground. And a lot of those types of characteristics are sometimes lost when natural processes aren't occurring in our forests. So oak woodlands are they do well with fire. They're dependent on fire. And so that's one of the characteristics that historically maintain them. So you can kind of think about those things that fire would do to that system, and then we go in and try to mimic it to the best degree possible.
Is part of the problem that the natural human inclination is to make things look pretty and manicured, that you need a little sloppiness in nature to make things work for birds and other critters?
Yeah, that's a good example. One of the things that we've recognized is the importance of the dead limbs, and especially the dead limbs that are on the bottom of oak trees. Oaks are really unique in that they have the ability to compartmentalize disease, and so it's very common for an oak tree to have a decadent dead branch. And so the importance of that is something we think about.
So, Marcella, I understand there are a number of partners that KBO works with, the Klamath Bird Observatory, including North American Bird Conservation Initiative and Partners in Flight. What are some of the things you do with some of your partners in efforts to help birds and to expand the reach of the KBO?
Definitely. They're really exciting, these partnerships that we have, especially Partners in Flight. Jamie just got back from a really great PIF meeting, as we call it. It's amazing because they're bringing these people from all different areas, all different observatories, different government backgrounds, that come and get together and speak about the wellness of the birds and what we can do when we, even in our areas of expertise, cross party lines, so to speak.
What are things that people can do then? I mean, if they're interested in being nice to birds and maybe don't have a lot of land or something and don't necessarily have the energy or the time to go out and get into massive restoration projects, are there simple things that people can do in their own backyards that will be bird-friendly?
What's really exciting is our third annual Mountain Bird Festival is coming up in May 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and we have a really great workshop being led on backyard birding, building a backyard haven. So you can come on Saturday and go to this wonderful workshop, and then on Sunday actually get to tour some of the best backyards in Ashland for birding. And so even just small things like planting the proper plants and creating an environment, bringing your cat inside, they're one of the worst things that you can do for birds, is keeping your cat outside. So small things like that can really make a big difference just in your own backyard.
I remember hearing about the number of bird deaths attributable to cats. The number is fairly shocking, isn't it, Jamie?
Yeah, it's 3 million birds per day are killed by outdoor cats.
Wow.
Including domestic and feral cat colonies.
So we're talking a billion birds a year.
Yeah.
Wow. Am I got that right? 3
million? It's more than that.
Okay.
Significantly more than that.
That's a lot of birds. Okay. Wow, that's amazing. Talk about some of the other events you have coming up at the Klamath Bird Observatory this spring, ways in which people can get an idea of what there is out there for bird health.
The Mountain Bird Festival is a fantastic opportunity for birders to become conservationists. You know, birding is the fastest growing pastime in the United States. It's coming right behind golf, with birders spending about $60 billion a year on the pastime. But in order to see all of these bird specialties, you really have to take action and become a conservationist. It's just like JPR, you know, in order to be able to enjoy it, you have to be part of conserving it. So that's what's so great about this festival. So you can come down to the festival, you can learn so much about conservation. We have a lot of really fun events this year. We've got a quick three beers tasting and science talk, where you can enjoy three beers from Swing Tree and learn about our featured bird, which is the olive-sided flycatcher. We're doing some really important work with them. And you can go on field trips that range from birding by ear and swimming in song to seeing great gray owl hatchlings fledge, to a calliope hummingbird field trip. We go as far north as Table Rocks, as far south as Shasta Valley, and as far east as the Klamath Basin. We've got about 30 field trips. 30% of them are new this year, and a lot of really great workshops. And then on Friday night, we even have a really fantastic exclusive showing of The Messenger, which is this new documentary. It hasn't been released yet. They're hoping it does for birds what Blackfish did for the killer whale.
What are the dates of the Mountain Bird Festival?
May 20th, 21st, and 22nd.
20 through 22nd. I notice all events seem to include either beer or wine these days. It's like birds and beer, birds and wine, you know, all that sort of stuff. Grab your headphones. We have a phone call for you. Here is Daniel in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jamie Stevens and Marcella Schotto from the Klamath Bird Observatory. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning. I'm an Ashland resident, and I know JPR is out of Ashland. The comment I have is that in the foothills, kind of between town and the watershed up above town, there's a lot of development going on. And right at this time, I'm aware of some some oak forests that are being cut into, developed. You can see new dirt driveways and roads, et cetera, going in. And I don't really have a question with that, except perhaps along the lines of what can we do from a citizen point of view to slow this kind of development down. So right in the oak transition zone there.
All right. Thanks for that, Daniel. Appreciate it. So, Jamie, what can you tell us about the development effects on birds? I can imagine they are negative impacts potentially.
Yeah, development is definitely one of the threats to existing oak woodlands. And, you know, there's a few different things to think about, whether or not we can meet multiple objectives depending upon what that type of development is, whether or not we can maintain a healthy oak ecosystem around it that's still wildlife friendly. And then the other thing is just to, I think, continue to support the conservation effort. So it's not mitigation, so to speak, but the idea of, because we know oak is being lost to development, we need to also prioritize it for conservation in areas where it is available to do so, and make sure that we do those restoration efforts in the oak woodlands that are still intact so that they stay healthy over the next century and more.
These are not terribly fast-growing trees. I imagine if you take out a bunch of oaks, you're talking in, a couple of decades before you have anything like an oak woodland setting again that a bird would recognize and use?
Yeah, definitely. They do tend to stump sprout. What I mean by that is they tend to, they'll regenerate themselves. So if one's cut down, they'll regenerate themselves, and it's one of the things that allows them to do well in fire. And the young oak ecosystems are equally important. Actually, one of the things that is surprising is that there aren't a lot of age classes of oaks, and most of them do tend to be older. So I guess I don't want to undersell the importance of young oak woodlands as well in that natural succession.
Okay. How can people contact the Klamath Bird Observatory if they want to learn more, Marcella?
You can reach out on our website at www.klamathbird.org, and you can email us at kbo@klamathbird.org. There's still about 40 slots available for the Mountain Bird Festival this year. So send us an email ASAP or register online.
All right, klamathbird.org to reach the Klamath Bird Observatory. Marcella Schotto is the Assistant Director. Jamie Stevens, the Science Director. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having us.